You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
You know, listening to that rundown, I'm already feeling nostalgic for the soon-to-depart 2012. I wish we could turn back the clock and experience some of those events all over again.
Sadly, we just can't do that, Brendan, because, of course, the arrow of time only points in one direction, forwards. Just why we're forced to march from the past to the future and cannot backtrack has been a big mystery for physicists for years. But Raphael Busso, a string theorist at the University of California, Berkeley, thinks the answer to this problem of time may lie in the multiverse, the idea that our universe is one of many parallel neighbouring universes, as he explained to reporter Sophie Hebden.
String theory posits that matter is ultimately comprised of tiny vibrating threads of energy. Raphael Busso, who is based at the University of California, Berkeley, has contributed to the theory's development, particularly in what it can predict about the history and structure of the universe, cosmology. I caught up with him to ask about the progress he's made on using string theory to understand cosmology. Or is he using cosmology to rule out string theory? I'm getting all tied up here. What exactly is string theory? And what does it have to do with cosmology?
It wasn't invented for the purpose of understanding quantum gravity. It wasn't invented as a unified theory of everything, which is certainly how I think about it now. It was invented as, not even as a theory, it was invented as some formula that somebody wrote down, which was supposed to help us understand the physics of the strong interaction, quarks, protons, neutrons, things like that.
Yeah.
Way back in the 60s. And it took on its own dynamics. It's turned out that this formula can be understood by thinking about strings interacting instead of point-like particles interacting with each other. The mathematical structure that had been uncovered was so rigid and so rich that one thing just kind of led to another without much choice about it.
Along with string theorist Joe Polchinski at the University of California, Santa Barbara, Busso has played an important role in unraveling some of string theory's problems.
You may have heard of the fact that string theory has too many dimensions. It has 9 spatial dimensions, and
yeah,
we see only 3, and that used to be viewed as a sort of embarrassment, because you then have to say, okay, well, 6 of them must be very small so that we don't see them. They're curled up in, you know, on scales that are not accessible even in the best microscopes or particle accelerators we have. And that's perfectly possible, but it wasn't really doing that much for us. It was more like something that we had to say in order to not have a contradiction. One thing that we discovered in string theory, and Joe Polchinski and I played a role in that discovery in the year 2000, is that there isn't just one way of getting rid of the 6 extra dimensions. There's a huge number of different ways of doing that. And they all lead to three-dimensional worlds, but the three-dimensional worlds look a little bit different, sort of the way the laws of physics look different in air and in water. Fundamentally, they're the same, but there's certain effective laws that are different. And it led to this picture of what's called the landscape of string theory, where there are many different ways in which you could have made the three-dimensional world, but and we just happen to be one realization of that. And that, in turn, this idea that there might be many different, what we call vacua, or different ways of making empty three-dimensional space, that has some impact on how we might think about the era of time.
So the idea of your vacua, are they sort of pockets of universes, would you say?
So there's sort of 2 ways of thinking about them. One is as different states in the theory. So if I give you the standard model of particle physics, you know, electrons, photons, and so on, you know that you can build water molecules out of those particles. These are sort of possibilities that are built into the theory. Another question is the actual phenomenology. Do these things dynamically get made? There are many things that we could, in principle, build out of electrons and quarks and photons that didn't get made in the real universe because of the way the dynamics played out. For example, there are materials that we created in labs which never were created in any natural processes. And there are many other imaginable materials that have never been created. So there are these different ways of making three-dimensional space which are built into string theory as possibilities. The same way that water and air and iron and so on are built as possibilities into the standard model of particle physics. And then cosmological dynamics decides which of these things are actually made, in this case, which of the three-dimensional worlds are produced, how abundantly they're produced in different parts of the universe, and so on. And that dynamics leads to something called the multiverse. It's really not such a good name because it makes it sound much more mysterious, like sort of disconnected universes. It's more like, you know, you have a tank of air, you have a tank of water, they're separated by glass. It's not much more mysterious than that anyway.
The prediction from string theory of the existence of a multiverse, there are billions and billions of different universes, called vacua, each of which has different particles and different forces, provides an explanation for the precise value of a fundamental constant in our own vacua. This number is incredibly tiny. It's 0.00, and keep writing zeros until you have gone 120 places after the decimal point, and is known as the cosmological constant. It repulses gravity and allows space-time to expand faster and faster. Astronomers measured this accelerating expansion in the late 1990s, and the cause of it has been dubbed dark energy. But it has been difficult for theoretical physicists to explain why, if dark energy is due to the cosmological constant, it has the precise value that it does. The cosmological constant we measure seems to be just large enough to give rise to an expanding universe that allows observers, like you and me, to evolve. A larger value for the cosmological constant would rip matter in the early universe apart, so fast that stars and galaxies could never have formed. It seems like a remarkable coincidence that our universe is so perfectly tailored for us to exist, but string theory has a simple solution. If we accept that there are many vacua in the landscape of possibilities predicted by string theory, then some will, by the laws of probability, have a cosmological constant of the size we see. So, there's nothing particularly special about that value at all. We should expect to measure a small cosmological constant, because life would only be able to evolve in one such corner of the landscape. That prediction was a major success for string theory.
String theory, in my view, is the only game in town that has provided a reasonable explanation of that number. That does not mean that it's necessarily right. But until a comparable or better idea comes along, I think it goes on the list of things that should make us take string theory very seriously. Particularly this aspect of string theory, can it help us understand cosmology better? Can we use cosmology to rule out string theory or to rule out how we currently understand string theory? So I think that's where I see my work. I don't think that there should be any sort of ideological view there that, you know, I somehow like string theory and it has to be correct and I have to fit it onto the universe. It's more the other way around. I think it's there aren't that many theories that have a chance of being a consistent theory of quantum gravity that have, you know, passed so many consistency checks that are so rich and which are also now starting to make contact with observation, in particular the acceleration of the universe, which we have, again, no other explanation for.
The idea that there are many vacua may also impact how we think about the arrow of time, this idea that time progresses from the past into the future.
You know, subjectively, of course, we experience an arrow of time. We remember the past. We don't remember the future. We try to predict the future, but with limited success most of the time. Why is this? The first guess might be this asymmetry comes from an asymmetry in the laws of nature, that perhaps things simply evolve differently if I run the film forward than if I run the film backward. And very often it does seem that way. If you spill a glass of milk, and, you know, you film that on video and then you run the video backwards, you can immediately tell that that video is running backwards as the milk collects itself and the glass, you know, puts itself back together. But at the same time, if you really dig more deeply at the underlying laws of physics, they're actually completely time symmetric. There's nothing going on at the microscopic level, which is in any way different as you run things into the future or into the past. And so, what is it then that makes it possible to understand, to see right away that the film is running the wrong way? It has to do with disorder. It has to do with what physicists call entropy. You see that entropy or disorder increases towards the future, but not towards the past. The state where the glass is broken, the milk is spilled, is much more disorderly in a very specific mathematical sense, in that there are many more ways you could arrange all the microscopic pieces, the atoms and molecules, into a state of broken milk glass than ways in which you can arrange them into a state that we would call an intact glass of milk. And the problem with the era of time is to understand why it is that disorder is increasing only in one direction. Because if you pick a random state of the universe and you ask, okay, suppose it's not maximally disordered, what's going to happen? Well, if you run it towards the future, it will get more disordered. This is called the second law of thermodynamics. If you ran it towards the past with a big computer, you would also find that it would get more disordered, unless it was a very special kind of state that came from an even more ordered state in the past. And that's the kind of universe that we live in. And so the era of time problem used to be understanding why, well, it still is at some level, it's understanding why the early universe was so incredibly ordered, so that, you know, 13.7 billion years later, we still see disorder increasing, not having reached the maximum. We still see an era of time. That's the mystery. How come that there was so much order in the early universe?
What Busseau came to realize, through work with colleagues in 2002, is that the problem of the arrow of time depends on what sort of vacua the theory has, such as how many there are, what cosmological constant each has, and how they are connected to each other. He has been exploring this further with his FQXI grant of $100,000.
What I've been thinking about since I got this grant is something other side of the same coin. It turns out, as I found, that it also goes the other way. So what can happen if the vacua of your theory, if there's more than one vacua, I mean, these vacua are arranged in just the right way, it is actually possible to start the universe out very, very disordered, much more disordered than it is today, and yet still get an era of time. That's an interesting new result, which I think was not fully appreciated before. Now, the way that you start out with very large entropy is you would start out in a different vacuum, which admits higher disorder than our vacuum overall. And it is possible in some ways of arranging the vacua, and string theory seems to arrange them that way, so that's where things connect up with the string landscape. It's possible that there's no way to get to any vacua that contain observers like ours without first going sort of through a bottleneck of extremely highly ordered states. And so even though you started very disorderly, even more disordered than the universe is now, you can't get to any kind of universe that's actually observed by anybody without first creating a lot of order. That's kind of the key result here. So it means that, you know, depending on the structure of the vacuum, on how many ways there are to make three-dimensional space and how they're arranged in the theory, it is not necessary nor is it sufficient to start with a highly ordered state in order to explain the error of time. You can have situations where high order doesn't help you, and you can even have situations where high order isn't necessary and you nevertheless get an error of time.
Vacua changing state is called vacuum decay. One type of vacuum can decay to a neighbouring vacuum. In other words, one type of universe can turn into another with different laws, except that it doesn't affect all of space at the same time. It's a bit like water boiling, in which a bubble of steam forms and expands.
You have bubbles within bubbles, they all expand very large. And the question is, on the way to where we are now, so there's a decay chain of vacua. And the question is, did you have to go through a vacuum that is very highly ordered in order to get to a vacuum like ours that has observers in it? Some landscapes and some ways of arranging the vacua, that is in fact the case. One thing that I've been trying to understand with a student, actually, is how sensitive this result is to situations where the initial state is not in just purely one vacuum, but might be distributed in a sort of probabilistic way over several different vacua. And what we're finding is that the result is robust in the sense of being able to accommodate plausible initial conditions that we believe the multiverse dynamics leads us to, but not necessarily all possible initial conditions. You know, it's really still ongoing work, and the implications of this result, that you don't necessarily need a highly ordered initial state, are still being worked out, and my group here is, you know, among the people working on this.
So can you just eliminate Big Bang cosmology with your string theory?
You're right. You see, the Big Bang was always a placeholder. I mean, Big Bang cosmology is used in usually just in the sense of saying, well, the early universe was hot and dense and expanded. And then, you know, from that, from those few words, if you put those together with what we know about particle physics, you can explain an enormous number of facts about the universe to incredible quantitative precision. And that's very, very beautiful. But it doesn't mean that you actually know what the Big Bang is. If you run it all the way back, well, you know, maybe there was a period of inflation. We don't know what preceded that. And so if you don't think there was inflation, you would run into a singularity. If you don't really believe that, you know, a singularity is a physical thing, it should have some resolution. We should understand what that really means. The story that I just told you about vacua decaying into other vacua simply gives you a longer prequel to what we call the early universe.
Thank you to Raphael Busso for talking to Sophie Hebden. You can learn more about his research in an article and video on our website, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast.